Charlie Sellers, welcome to the John Riley Project and the fabulous podcast studio here in the converted living room. And Charlie, you're a candidate for Poway Unified School District, Trustee Area C, an incumbent running for re-election. How's it going?
It's going well, John. Thank you for having me into your home and your workspace. It's very impressive for a non-commercial facility, I gotta say. Campaign's going well. It's a little unorthodox, which I guess if I'm the candidate, really can't be any other way other than unorthodox. But I'm doing fine. We can get sort of into the details in a bit as to why it's unorthodox and that sort of thing. But it's going well. I'm using platforms like this to try and get my message out to people and my agenda and itinerary. And so I think it's going fine.
Nice. So you've been in office now for almost 4 years. So
yes.
What are some of your biggest accomplishments or maybe some interesting events that have happened over the previous 4 years?
Well, I think the biggest accomplishment is we eradicated John Collins from the district. And I use that term specifically because John Collins was a cancer on the district. He was part of a regime that had been there for over 30 years. They were corrupt as all get out. And in the end, it was proven that he was stealing from our district and indirectly our children.
That's right.
And so that's certainly the biggest accomplishment. I won't say it's mine alone, but there's no question that without my impetus as well as Kimberly Beatty's, it wouldn't have happened. I can go into more detail if you like, but it's like I said, that's the single biggest accomplishment was getting rid of a corrupt superintendent and replacing his cabinet, which has now been done. There are no members of his inner circle left from the John Collins days, and that's important because they were both buttressing his actions and allowing them to go on, as was brought out very clearly in most of the investigative work that took place. But I'm very proud of the fact that we got rid of him. The legal proceedings took their course, and there's a lot of compromises that go on in the judicial process that I would like to have seen go a different way. But in the end, he's being forced to repay about $185,000 to the district. It's a fraction of what he stole. The report indicated that he stole at least $345,000 that he wasn't entitled to. Truth be told, it was probably more than that because the records only went back so far.
Oh, wow.
That was part of the problem in doing the forensic audit, is that the district had very poor record keeping standards. I suspect that may have been intentional. And a lot of the records that should have been there were gone, had been removed or destroyed.
Wow.
And so we could only go back so far. But as far back as we went, the tune was about $350,000. And so we got him to agree to cough up, about half of that.
Well, I think the community is overjoyed that he's gone. I mean, especially after the scandal and the theft.
If I might interrupt.
Yeah, sure.
They are now that we've exposed him
for
what happened. There was quite a bit of pushback while we were doing the exposing from the public who thought he was grand and his kingdom was also grand.
Yeah, it was interesting because, even after the $1 billion bond, there were a lot of people that called for him to be removed from his position just for that. But the previous board had renewed his contract, gave him an extension. And then in 2014, when you ran, three people were elected and it was looking like we were going to have change. And then two of the three that were reelected with you ended up aligning themselves right with the Collins regime. But it took some time and effort to expose, the corruption. And thank goodness it's in our rearview mirror.
Yes, I think the abject theft, corruption is in our rearview mirror. I think some of the dysfunction remains.
Well, yeah.
But yes, you're right. And I've been very open about this. You know, when I was running, I was elected alongside TJ Zane and Michelle O'Connor Radcliffe. Mm-hmm. And you and I were running sort of alongside Michelle.
Right.
On a platform of change. And I was very open after the election and shortly into our term that Michelle had pretty much flipped and gone to what I consider the dark side. And I was very disappointed in her.
Right.
And I was very clear about that. And there's much public record supporting that. TJ, I never expected anything else from it. You can go on my website now that hasn't been updated since the last election. And you can read my position statement. And on there I say, if you like what's going on now, elect TJ to the vacant position because he will continue. He will continue in that same vein. And,
right.
he did.
Right. So now you're facing off against TJ this time.
I am.
Yeah. So that was interesting, the way they carved up the maps. And that was a whole, you know, cluster, the way that whole thing was organized.
Interesting is one word for it.
Interesting. Yeah. But the end result is that you're running, two incumbents are facing off against each other, you and TJ Zane. And I know there's Terry Norwood is a competitor. She's entered the race as well. So
Right. How
do you see that dynamic playing out?
Well, you know, you mentioned the districting process, and that was, you know, you look up gerrymander in the dictionary and you'll see Poway Unified's picture there, because that's exactly what happened.
That's right.
And yes, they took, there are four of us who live in Rancho Penasquitos within a 3-mile radius. I said very clearly all along, we should all just be in the same district. There should just be one of us. Maybe you could make an argument for two because we're separated by a freeway, but that would be it. Well, they managed to carve it up into three separate districts. They managed to get, they being Michelle, Darsh Patel, and TJ, managed to get Darsh and Michelle, who live about a mile from each other, in two separate districts. And if you look at the map on the district website, map 131, you'll see how ridiculously drawn it is. And they and TJ managed to carve himself a nice little district that includes me, but also includes a plus 11% Republican voter registration, which certainly is in his wheelhouse.
Right.
So, you know, they managed to work together to get what they wanted. And we were unsuccessful at getting the county board to overturn it for a variety of sort of backroom reasons. But I'm facing TJ and Terry Norwood in this wildly configured district that TJ and I live in Rancho Penasquitos, yet the vast majority of the district is in Rancho Bernardo. But they didn't see fit to put Rancho Bernardo all in one district, which could easily have been done and would have been done in the maps that Kimberly and I were supporting. They cut Rancho Bernardo up into three separate districts. I think they did that to dilute its voting influence, but that's just my opinion. But so now you have two people from Rancho Penasquitos who are incumbents who are seeking a seat in Rancho Bernardo that encompasses mostly Rancho Bernardo. And that's probably Terry Norwood's primary reason for entering the race, because she is from Rancho Bernardo.
Right.
Unfortunately, that alone is not enough to qualify you to serve on the school board. So I'm definitely the outsider in this race. I'm running against both unions, which support TJ, and I'm running against both political parties, one of which supports TJ, one of which supports Terry. So I have no institutional backing whatsoever in this race. I'm as independent as you get.
So you're an incumbent, but you're arguably the outsider.
I am definitely the outsider in my own race, yes.
Right. It's interesting that, you know, TJ Zane, again, I'm not speaking about him personally. I'm thinking of this more from a conceptual point. This is a person that is the former executive director of the GOP in San Diego County, and yet he's supported by the teachers union and the employees union. And that seems to kind of go against the grain of what I would normally expect from not just a Republican, but a pretty heavy hitting Republican.
Yes, and he also spent 7 years as the executive director of the Lincoln Club. And while he was at the Lincoln Club, he personally authored some of the most controversial, if not offensive, political advertising San Diego County has ever seen. He also wrote op-eds in support of Prop 32, which would have taken the ability of labor unions to spend money in political campaigns away. So he has openly advocated for unions to be removed from the political process. And yet he's endorsed by two unions. So the thinking person should ask themselves, why is that the case? Why would two unions who ostensibly support as anti-union a political figure as they could possibly find? And it's because he spent 4 years rolling over for them. I mean, he spent 4 years cultivating their friendship by giving them everything they asked for. You would ask, why would he do this? He's doing it for personal benefit. It's an open secret. TJ wants to succeed Mark Kersey as District 5 city council person. And he needs a platform to do that because there are going to be a lot of qualified Republicans who want that job in 2 years. And he has to set himself apart. And serving on the school board for, at that point, 6 years would certainly do that. And so he wants to keep his job. He wanted to get his job in the first place, and then he wanted to keep it. And so he's basically spent 4 years kowtowing to these two unions.
Wow. Wow. I mean, that's, yeah, that's like a flip-flop. That's going from one side to the other.
It's politics.
It's politics. It makes for strange bedfellows.
Indeed.
Right? Okay. But it's interesting. So he might only, if he's successful, he might only serve for 2 years.
Well, that would be his goal. I mean, there's no guarantee that he would be elected to District 5 or that he'll even run for it. But I know that that's something he'd like to do. And it's been talked about in political circles. And I think he's positioning himself to do that. Whether he'll be successful or not, who knows? I can tell you one thing.
What's that?
Which is that if he doesn't get reelected, if he doesn't win this district, which is completely in his wheelhouse, in Rancho Bernardo, full of senior Republicans, plus 11 voter reg, if he can't beat some poorly funded, unaligned candidate like myself for re-election to the school board, nobody in their right mind is going to consider him viable for the city council.
Interesting. So there are larger implications to this race beyond what's just happening here at Poway Unified.
Certainly for him.
Yeah, for him.
Not for me. This is the only job I want, and I have no higher political aspirations. I never have.
Right. I understand. Wow, very interesting. So the dynamics in this race are intriguing, you know. And meanwhile, some of the other, you know, candidates that are running for re-election, you know, only maybe has one opponent, or you know, they're going to be heavy favorites in their district. I think your district is the most intriguing one. I think it's the most interesting one, and I'm looking forward to following it.
Well, I think there's definitely, you know, it's politics. There's a lot of backroom things that go on and things that are done by people you wouldn't ordinarily think have aligned interests that do. One of the cardinal rules in politics, which is what makes it so bad, is that in politics, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And that's just so bad in so many ways.
Right.
Because first of all, it's issue specific. They may be the enemy of your enemy on this issue, but on the next issue, they may be the friend of your enemy. And so aligning yourselves with people who don't,
right,
who don't philosophically, you know, really agree with you on 95% of the issues is really, it's bad public policy.
Sure.
But it goes on all the time.
Wow. You know, the whole dynamic with the Poway Unified Board is it's kind of gotten into these two factions. There's a majority of three and a minority of two. So tell me a little more about that dynamic and how that's affected some of the policy over the last 4 years.
Well, that is the perception and it is the reality. Kimberly Beatty and I sit on one side of most issues. Darsh Patel, Michelle, and TJ sit on the other side. It's very interesting because I think a lot of their opposition is simply to us personally, more than to our ideas. I think a lot of their opposition is reflexive. This is a good example of the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Okay.
You have two liberal Democrats in Darsh and Michelle aligning themselves almost uniformly with a purportedly conservative Republican, TJ, and you know, I think TJ is very definitely doing the enemy of my enemy is my friend kind of a thing, at least on this issue. They also tend to support the superintendent, both past and present, in whatever it is they wanted to do. I think, again, many cases reflexively, because we will bring arguments opposed to certain things that are going on. And I think they support a not so much supporting her, but against us. But also, I think they perhaps don't want to admit that the choices that they've made weren't perfect.
Wow. Yeah, it just seems that whenever I, if I happen to attend a meeting, or if I'm reading an article in the Poway Chieftain or PomeradoNews.com, whenever there's a vote, it's always 3-2, you know, and it just, it's, I don't think I've seen an example, at least in terms of the larger policy votes that have taken place, where it wasn't 3-2. You know, it's not like these two groups ever intermingle or cross over. It's like there's a wall between the two.
Yeah, the only time, and again, I'll be very blunt about this, the only time you wind up with a majority, with a uniformity or a unanimous vote, is when the other three see it in their political interests to join us. Kimberly and I vote strictly based on principle, and I challenge anyone to deny that. Go back and look at the tapes and everything else. We vote on principle, and we give very clear rationales.
Give me an example.
For why we vote the way that we do. One example would be the budget. Kimberly and I, for the first time, voted against the district's budget this time. The other three voted for it. And again, it's not that Kimberly and I felt the budget was incorrect. We feel Ron Little does a good job and the budget was correct. We felt the priorities were immoral. We felt that the amount of money that was being allocated to increased compensation and bonuses for staff and teachers was out of proportion to what we could afford and also to what's justified. And we felt that the priorities with regards to student safety and things like textbooks and other things were out of whack. And so we voted against the budget. Mm-hmm. The other three voted for the budget because, A, they don't want to alienate staff, and also because they don't want to alienate the two unions out there that are benefiting from the budget priorities that are currently in place.
Right. Right. And so now that this budget has been approved, that was a package deal with the raises. Is that
yes.
Right? So what's interesting is that when you look at the compensation matrix, I guess they call it step and column for the teachers, is that for many teachers, they automatically get raises every year.
They do.
And for seniority, or if they happen to gain additional credentialing or degrees.
Correct.
And it's not every single year, but for a great deal of them. Mm-hmm. So they generally get a raise almost every year, but then this is a raise on top of it. It's almost like the whole matrix, someone did an auto calc on it and all the numbers bubbled up.
That's exactly what happened. It's yes, exactly. Nobody's step or column was changed, but the steps and columns themselves were adjusted.
Right.
So column 8, if it was X dollars, column 8 is now X dollars plus 2.5%. And so, because that was the ongoing raise that was given, in addition to the 3% bonus, one-time bonus that was given for prior years.
Wow.
And so, I think the public needs to understand some basic facts, which is that we all love teachers and we admire the work that they do. And we understand that, yes, they are the most important part of our business. They are not the only part of our business. To hear them talk, they are. But there are many other people involved, the classified staff, the administrators, the parents. There are many other people involved in the education of a child besides a teacher. I reiterate, teacher is the most important person in that equation, but they are not the only person, and they don't function alone, and they cannot function without the assistance of others, including the school board. And so when you talk about priorities, you know, you have to consider, you know, that there is this perception regarding teachers that they've been very successful in fostering. But the truth of it is California has the second highest average teacher compensation in the country. Poway Unified's average teacher compensation is above the state average. So if you look at it objectively, Poway Unified's teachers are definitely not underpaid. You wouldn't know this to talk to their union.
Of course.
And so when Kimberly and I look at the budget, we say, okay, where are the needs greatest? Because that's what public policy is. It's about assigning priorities.
Sure.
Who decides gets money.
Right.
And to quote Kimberly. And so we looked at it and we said, there are greater needs elsewhere. And the other three members of the board disagreed with us because the union vehemently disagreed with us, both of the unions.
Of course.
And as a result, we now have a budget that's loosely balanced for the current year, but it's $8 million in deficit for the next 2 years. Guess how much the raise is totaled?
$8
million? $8 million, yes.
Interesting.
Yes, indeed. So, we look at that and we say, but for these raises that were already being given to parties whose pay is above the national and state average, we could have a balanced budget going forward. And I think there are a lot of people who think we should have a balanced budget or certainly think that should be the goal. So I think that's an issue. And again, you look and you say, okay, well, there's a reason that the unions oppose me and support the other three. And again, I'll give you an example that every decision that I make is based on principle. It's not based on politics. Is heretofore, as everyone does or will now know, my wife is a classified employee in the district. She's a school librarian. So she is a member of PSEA, Poway School Employees Association. Heretofore, even though the law does not require it, I have always abstained from voting on their contract.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Right. This year, I felt that the decision to give these raises was so egregious, I couldn't abstain, and I voted against it.
You voted against your wife's own pay raise?
I did.
How'd that go over at home?
Well, I spent a couple of nights on the couch with the dogs, but, some of her friends aren't my friends anymore.
I would bet that.
Yeah, but, right is right, and I wasn't elected to be popular. I was elected to do what I thought was best. And so, but I could have just abstained from voting on it again for the fourth time, but it wasn't right, and I needed to make a public statement to say, not only do I disagree with this, it's not just the teachers' increases that I disagreed with. I disagreed with the classified increases as well, so I voted no. Had no effect, but that's the only statement I could make.
Right. So so the budget itself, though, while it is showing a modest surplus for the, the current year, right?
Actually,
18-19?
Actually, not anymore. As after the revisions from the, normally we only get one revision in May, but there came another revision shortly thereafter from the governor. And so we went from about $1 million surplus to about $1.5 million minus. So we are actually in slight deficit for 2018-19, but it's basically break even. But the out years of $8 million deficit did not change.
Wow. Did you see that article on patch.com? It talked about the deficits that a lot of school districts in San Diego County are facing. And it said that Poway was almost the poster child for this challenge, where the costs are rising. And they had called out the pensions. Those numbers are increasing. They called out the declining enrollment, which was affecting some of the revenue. And then they also spoke about the increased costs for special needs students. And so just kind of all together, it's created a math problem, right? Where a lot of school districts are struggling to balance their budget.
Yeah, and this is a problem across the state, and I'll highlight a comment from one of my colleagues. Darsh Patel sat right next to me, and when we argued about this over the budget and the raises and the ongoing costs of pension contributions and how those are increasing, her comment was, well, the state just has to fix that because it can't go on. And I said publicly, I thought that was one of the most naive things I'd ever heard in a public setting, that the state was actually going to solve this problem. The state is creating this problem, but I don't think they're going to step in and solve it.
Right.
And so I felt that was really ridiculous. But I think that there are, you know, there are many factors involved. And yes, this, we have the cost of special education is rising at a very, very precipitous rate. We have pension issues as well and compensation. And again, you try to speak reasonably with the powers that be, the unions involved, and you don't get very far. And the reason is because the unions don't actually represent the membership.
Right.
They represent the senior membership, because in order to attain a position of power inside a union of any kind, you have to be one of the senior members.
Right.
So you've been there a while, you're closer to retirement, you have higher compensation. And so a lot of the issues that are addressed by, and I'll only speak to these unions, in particular PFT, they're addressing the issues of the more senior members. And they're not really concerned about the rank and file, about the entry of new teachers into their profession and their union and how they're taken care of, and the fact that, again, you have decisions that benefit the higher paid and more senior members of the union rather than the whole body.
Right.
And so I think you, in large case, you have union leadership acting on their own behalf more so than their membership. And I've said this again very openly to people who came to me 4 years ago after the election and said, oh my God, PFT endorsed TJ Zane as purportedly conservative and anti-union a figure as you can get. How do I change that? And I said, you have to take your union back. I said, the right rank and file have to rise up, face down the leadership and say, no, we're taking this union back from you and we're going to run it for all of us, not just for the senior leadership. That hasn't happened, but that's what I told them had to happen. And again, that doesn't endear you to people who already didn't like you. So, and again, it's not that I'm anti-union. This is, that's an absolutely ridiculous premise.
Right.
Anyone who knows me and who knows my political history can tell you that I support organized labor. I believe everyone has the right to unionize, and I believe in the concept. So when they say, well, what do you have against the union? I say, I really don't have anything against the union. I have something against the union's leadership.
Because but you're also a certified public accountant.
I am a CPA.
And you make budgets and financial matters your everyday business.
Right. And as a, you know, and it's interesting because there are those who call me a liberal or a progressive. And I say, call me whatever you want, but at least acknowledge I'm a pragmatic one. And that's really, I think, what's called for when you're in a leadership position. You have to be pragmatic. Mm-hmm. And you can't just serve the people who support you. You have to serve everyone. I made it very clear when I was running that the people I represent in this order, the students, the parents, the taxpayers, and the employees, in that order.
So say that again. Students?
The students, then the parents,
right.
Then the taxpayers, then the employees.
Interesting. Okay.
And so I believe you can represent them all fairly and equally, but there's no question where the priorities have to lie. And, you know, when you deal with interest groups of any kind,
right,
they feel their priorities are paramount.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
They and so, and as a public official or someone in charge of anything, quite frankly, you have to weigh all the considerations. You can't just say, okay, well, obviously you're the most important.
Wow. So if let's talk about the first two priorities, the students and the parents. So what do you believe are the most pressing issues? You know, we were talking a lot about finance and unions and, mm-hmm. you know, budgets, but let's talk about students. What are some of the most pressing issues that are facing students where there needs to be some change in direction with what's going on the school board?
I think it all comes down to allocation of resources, which is that, again, I'll be blunt. When you give a teacher a pay raise, it doesn't really help a student. Helps a teacher.
Right.
But it doesn't help a student.
What would help a student?
What would help a student would be to hire more teachers,
okay,
with that money, provide additional resources in terms of classroom support for the teachers in doing their job, materials, of course. We have, you know, we have kids learning French in 20-year-old textbooks.
20 years old?
Yeah. We have, so, believe me, there are people in outside the district, you know, Richard Mason and others who could give you chapter and verse on how old our textbooks are. But, wow. And that's language. We're not even talking about science or other things that change even more rapidly.
Yeah.
So I think when you look at that, you know, it's easy for someone to point and say, well, you don't like us because you won't give us more money. But I have to look at it from the standpoint of saying, look, my first priority is the student. How do I best help the student achieve?
Right.
And I do that by giving them resources. And paying a teacher more, if it particularly isn't called for, it doesn't help the student. It doesn't cut their class size, doesn't give them more test tubes in their biology or chem lab or whatever else it is that they've got to do. It doesn't provide any additional resources to a student. And so, you know, and they can say, well, if you don't pay teachers, you're going to have a hard time hiring them. Well, the superintendent herself brags about when we go to these job fairs, how all these other districts sit there with twiddling their thumbs and there's a line 10 miles long for people who want to apply for jobs in POSD. So obviously we do treat our teachers well.
Mm-hmm. That's always a good indication is how many people are applying for the job.
Right. Are lining up to get in here.
Yeah. Right on. Yeah.
It's very similar, quite frankly, to America,
right,
which is that, you know, America is sort of derided in many respects around the world, but yet people still line up to get in here.
Right.
So.
Interesting.
And so I think that's it's about allocation of resources, because one of the weird things about it being a public school district is you, unlike a company, you only control half your budget. You don't have any control over the revenue side. That's all dictated by the state. The state gives you what they give you, and they don't even tell you until the last minute what they're going to give you because they're still haggling over it. We can't control the revenue side. All we can control is the expenditure side. So we get X amount of money, and we have to decide how to spend it.
Well, hopefully it's X or slightly less, right?
Yeah.
Not more.
Theoretically, yes.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I just disagree with the spending priorities that are currently going on in our district.
So if you could just wave a magic wand and implement two or three things, what would you do?
Two or three things. Oh, my. That's a long list to pick two or three from.
Well, then give me more.
I'll pick two or three.
Okay.
One is that... truth be told, yes, I would freeze current salaries for a time, and I would take those additional expenditures and I would allocate them into the classroom or onto the sites. That's the first thing I would do. Second is I would pair our administrative staff. When I came into the district, when I was running, I said we had bloat at the district office. There's way more bloat now than there was before. We used to have three sort of deputy superintendents. We now have five. They're all paid substantially more than their predecessors were. And we've got other people who've been hired in capacities that I think could easily have been allocated among existing staff. I think that we've got so much bloat in the administration of our district, it's ridiculous. I'll give you an example.
Sure.
When I voted against the superintendent's contract, I was asked why. Why don't you support the hiring of the superintendent? And of course, everyone wants to make it personal.
Right.
You know, personal or even more nefarious ulterior motives. And I said, look, the bottom line is, and bear in mind, I said this with Marion Kim Phelps sitting in the room in the first row looking at me.
Right.
Okay. I said, because the bottom line is we could have gotten somebody better for less money.
Mm.
I interviewed all the candidates, and there were other candidates who I felt were better qualified who would have cost less to hire. And that's my job, is to get the best person at the best price. I'm not saying Marion's incompetent. I'm not saying that she isn't worth what we're paying her. I'm saying that we could have gotten similar value or better for less money. You do that when you buy a car. You do that when you buy a house. You do that when you hire an employee.
Right.
Well, she's an employee. And so it wasn't personal. It's just having interviewed all the candidates, I felt there were better candidates that we could have gotten for less money. And that money comes directly out of the pockets of our kids.
Right.
Those are textbooks we can't buy for them. Those are, again, test tubes and other lab supplies that we can't buy for them. And if you will, that's money we can't pay our teachers because of that. I mean, you know, it's not by itself going to balance the budget. But when you look at it in microcosm and then put it all together, it exceeds the sum of the parts. And so I that's one good example. And in addition to that, what else would I do? I think that there's a tremendous amount of politics on the campus sites. I think that the unions don't follow the law regarding communications with their members. They're not allowed to use district resources.
It's a politics amongst the
right.
The employees right. or the teachers.
Right. And they got away with this under Collins. They were allowed to do whatever they want. They need to take all that off.
Like, what do you mean? I don't understand.
Well, they use district email to contact their members with political messages. That's not allowed.
Is that like a law?
The law says you cannot use public resources for political purposes.
Ah.
Well, when you use district email, that's a public resource.
Right.
I'll take it farther.
Okay.
In terms of my philosophy of union operations, I don't think the district should be in the business of subsidizing union activities. Even though I support unions in their activities, we have teachers, four at least, that are on leave, quote unquote, that are basically being paid as teachers to work for Poway Federation of Teachers. And I'm kind of the belief that if you want a union, great, form a union, but you should pay for it yourself.
Well, of course, yeah.
But that's not how it works.
Really? So taxpayers are funding the staffing of the union?
Yes. There are teachers on release working for PFT who are accruing pension and other benefits. They get medical benefits just as if they were employees of the district, because they are. They remain as employees. That's how you have somebody like Candy Smiley, who just retired with I don't know how many years in the district. Well, those last 8 or 10 years or however many years there were, she was working for the union. She wasn't in a classroom, but she was accruing benefits and pension as if she was in the classroom.
Wow.
And I'm very much of the belief that if you want a union, I don't think there should be any barrier whatsoever to you forming a union.
Of course. Right.
But you should pay for it.
Of course.
And you should pay for it with your dues. And if you don't want to support, four people in your district, in your union office, you only want to pay for two, well, then that's fine.
So how do you enforce that? I mean, what can you do? Is that like a line item in the budget?
That's purely within the power of the district administration. The district could say, we are no longer going to pay for teachers on release. That's the technical term,
right,
to the unions. Because what happened is when PSEA, the classified union, found out that, the teachers get four people on release to work in their union activities. Well, we want four. We're only getting two. Instead of saying, well, they should be knocked back to two, no, we want four. And that is how life works.
Wow.
And I don't believe anybody should be unreleased to the union. I think that if you want to do that, the union should be a separate and distinct entity from the organization, from the district that it's representing the employees of, and they should fund their own activities.
Right. Well, it's almost like the union and the district are distinct entities, and they negotiate with each other and they try to work out, contracts, obviously. But it's not like they work for each other. It's like incestuous almost.
It is. And it exists, to my knowledge, only in public education, but it's very common.
But it is common.
And wow, so, again, these are just philosophical differences that I have.
Yeah.
And it has nothing to do, but yet, if I say this in a union meeting, again, I'm branded as anti-labor. And so, it all comes back to the taxpayer, what the taxpayer is paying for and what they're getting. And again, I'm a CPA. I look at things pragmatically. I understand when there's waste. And I think that, you know, in that regard, there's a lot of waste. And that's perfectly within the administration's power to do that. They could confront the union. They could say, no, we're no longer going to pay for people on release. And I'll give you an example. At the school board meeting where we approved the teacher raises, in response to Kimberly's and my argument that the district couldn't afford this because there were other priorities that were more important, TJ's response was, well, actually, this is a very good deal, because if the teachers went to impasse, they declared an impasse and they went to PERB, which is the Public Employee Retirement Board, then, and they went to that board, well, we would lose at that board and they would get 8%, 10%, 12%. So what we're giving them is a bargain and we should be grateful for it.
Wow.
Do you want that guy buying your next car? honestly, right. You know, I want, and I said this when I was running, and I said this when we were eradicating John Collins. I said, I want somebody who, when they negotiate anything, whether you're building a school, buying paper, or having a union contract, I want somebody who negotiates on behalf of the district.
Right.
And again, the district is teachers. I'm sorry. Parents, the students, the parents, taxpayers, 1, 2, 3.
Right.
And it's their money that's being spent, and that's who's paying you. That's who pays me my lovely stipend. And I want to represent them, and they're expecting me to go into that room and bargain on their behalf.
Of course. Yeah.
And that's not what happens.
They just roll over.
Right. Pretty much.
Give them what they want and then declare it a bargain.
Yes. And that's the beauty of politics, right?
And then get their support for the election and maybe get reelected.
Right. And
interesting.
And roll merrily forward up the political ladder.
Yeah. You see that at all levels of politics, where the unions and elected officials have this, you know, incestuous relationship where they each scratch each other's back.
And the answer to that is to remove all interest money from politics. Mm-hmm. And, you know, unfortunately, both sides always trying to get over on the other. You have imbalance. For example, the Janus decision that just came down in the Supreme Court says that you can't use union dues. You can't compel people to contribute to a union because they might disagree with the political activities of that union. That's fine if you restrict all other interest groups in the same way.
Right.
And so my belief has always been just ban all interest money from politics. The only money that should be coming into political campaigns should be coming from people.
Right.
But we're going in the opposite direction. And again, it's because one side is gaming the system and winning. And I'm for changing the system, but I'm for changing it on all sides, not just one side. I think all outside money should be banned from politics. The only people who should be able to give money to political campaigns are you and me. Shouldn't be a corporation, shouldn't be a PAC, shouldn't be a union, should just be you and me.
Well, it's interesting when you compare like Poway Unified with the city of Poway and how it's funded. Like in the city of Poway, corporations cannot donate, at least as far as I understand. Mm-hmm. And I know there's a $100 limit. Mm-hmm. So, but at Poway Unified, it's anything goes, right?
Yes. Poway Unified has no term limits. Poway Unified has no contribution restrictions whatsoever. If you, and this is something that concerned me, because 4 years ago when I was running, one of the candidates was independently wealthy. He was a multimillionaire. Mm-hmm. And my fear was that not only would he fund his own campaign, but he would fund the campaign of his people that he also supported to go on to the board with him. And there would have been nothing to stop that. If you decided you wanted to take out a second mortgage on your house and give $100,000 to Terry Norwood for her campaign for Poway School Board Trustee Area C, you could do it. There would be no restriction.
Wait. Terry's calling me right now.
You'd have to disclose it. Yes.
Yeah.
But there was nothing to stop it from happening.
Right. That's extraordinary.
It is extraordinary, and it.
Because you think at the local level that wouldn't exist, but it does.
Right.
Right.
And again, we We could address it,
and so
we haven't.
And you're not endorsed by either of the unions.
No.
So those unions are providing resources to your opponents.
They are.
And the political parties are providing resources to your opponents.
Correct.
And you're not.
No, right.
So you're an incumbent, but you're an underdog.
I am.
You're an incumbent, but you're an outsider.
Yes. Yeah, and it's, you know, well, and that comes with speaking your mind, and I'm comfortable with that, you know, but again, it is a disadvantage, and that's what forums like this are for, because I look to the camera and I say, you know, this is on you, the voter. You know, Plato said we get the governments we deserve.
Right.
And he's right. Because I sit here before you and say, look, I'm not getting money from anybody. I will represent you, and I will tell you in advance what I do and don't believe. And if you're comfortable with that, you think that I'm the guy who's going to best represent your point of view and your priorities, then support me. But you're not going to see a million signs for me out on the roadway. You're not going to get a mailer from me, you know, that's extolling my virtues on one side and then slapping my opponent on the other side, which now seems to be the trend. You're not going to get any of that. This is what you're going to get. This and what happens in the public setting at the school board meetings. You're going to get honest, straightforward answers to questions that you ask, and you're going to get open discussion of issues that should matter to you. And beyond that, the rest is just packaging. You know, but packaging costs money. So I don't come with packaging. You know, I'm the toy in the Toys for Tots bin. I come unwrapped.
You came wrapped in your Aztec shirt today.
I did. I am a loyal Aztec for life. I have 2 degrees from there, and I typically try to wear Aztec regalia on Saturday when they're playing.
Right. They're Eastern Michigan?
They are playing Eastern Michigan, okay. Yes.
Yeah, we were just comparing notes that we were, you know, at the game, and they got the new quarterback, and you know, he's a pretty dynamic guy. So.
He is, and they're
Ryan Agnew.
They managed to pull out a win last week, although they tried really hard to give it away at the end.
Oh, that was an amazing ending.
It was, but they managed to win a game that, by all rights, they should have won. I think they're doing well, and they have a lot of stability in their coaching and everything else. And yeah,
Rocky Long is all right. I like that guy.
He is, and he's
a straight talker like you.
He is another guy who calls it as he sees it, right. And I've always respected that about him. And that's the thing, you know, and. You know, having grown up in San Diego, and I grew up in Escondido,
okay,
which is a very conservative agricultural community when I was growing up in the 70s, mm-hmm. You know, and you know, I was a progressive growing up in that conservative environment, and you know, I was the lone voice in the wilderness, and so, you know, having lived in San Diego my whole life, having been in the minority politically most of my life, you know, I've learned to work with and interact with people who have different ideologies. And one of the things that I've never had a problem with is someone who believes differently than me. I can handle that. It's when you lie to me about what you really believe that I have a problem.
Right.
Because then I can't deal with you, because I don't know what you really want. Right. I only know what you're telling me you want.
Right.
And so I try not to do that to other people. I try to say, look, this is who I am. This is what I believe. These are my priorities. This is what I want. And I think that makes me easier to deal with, not harder. And other people don't do that. And there are other people out there who like to be told what they want to hear. And I'm not the one who's going to tell you that.
No, but I think, you know, I've known you now for like, you know, we met each other in the last campaign in 2014. And mm-hmm. You and I don't agree on a lot of things, you know, on political issues. Mm-hmm. But we do have areas where we do agree. And but the thing that I've always liked about you is that you're very straight. You know, you tell it like it is, and I know exactly where you're coming from. And just like you said, I can deal with you on that. And the areas where we have agreement, we know we can agree. And mm-hmm. where we don't have agreement, we respect each other. Because we understand their principles and where they come from. So
right.
It's all good. That's reasonable. It's rational.
Yeah, even if I don't agree with your views, I respect your right to hold them.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, lying to people is a lot of work. and truth be told, I've never been very good at it anyway.
Yeah. You know,
some people have an innate ability to do it well. Yeah, and they prosper in this business.
Sadly true.
But I'm not one of those people, so I don't try. And I find it easier just to tell people what you think. And I think that they do come away respecting you, even if they don't agree with you, even if they won't vote for you. They at least come away saying, okay, well, I have confidence in what he told me.
Yeah.
I mean, I might never in a million years vote for him because I don't agree with what he told me, but at least he told me what he thinks.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah, and you see a little bit of that on the national stage, but not nearly enough.
No, not much.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, you see a lot of, and again, the only thing I can do is appeal to people and say, look, you know, don't believe what you're told. Believe what you see. But in order to see something, you have to look. Okay. And if you spend all your time watching TV or playing video games or whatever else it is, you're not going to see much. You know, you've got to lift your head, look at what's going on, and if not get involved, at least pay attention. And I think if you do that, you can cut through the crap. But it takes effort. And unfortunately, America has become ignorant in terms of public policy. And that ignorance is born out of apathy because we'd rather do something else. And I don't know if people have convinced themselves that this stuff doesn't affect them or it doesn't matter, but that's just crazy. I mean, when we were running 4 years ago, one of the questions we got at every forum was, you know, 70% of the people in Poway Unified don't have children in the public schools. How do you get them to care about this? And we agreed that, gee, if you don't care about it, you're a moron. Right. Because you're paying for it. Neither one of us have kids in the school district anymore. And yet we're still paying to educate other people's children.
That's right.
And the quality of that educated child that comes out is going to determine the standard of living in this country, whether we remain a first world country or we become a second or third world country. And It's a function of getting what you pay for. And so if you don't have a vested interest in A, how much you pay to educate a child, B, the quality of that education, and C, the wherewithal of that child to come out and maintain society while we grow old, well, you're just clueless. And I don't think people are innately clueless. But I think when you're ignorant because of apathy, you're choosing to be.
Yeah, there's far too much of that, unfortunately. Wow. So what else is on your mind? Oh. What else you got to get off your chest?
Oh, my.
I like this.
well, it's in my particular race, for example, I'm running against TJ and Terry. Terry was once a supporter of mine. She has been brought into the race by the Democratic Party, which sees me as anti-union because I voted against some pay raises for union members. And so, she saw an opportunity to come into the race and get support of the Democratic Party, which she could not get 2 years ago. They did not support her 2 years ago. So I think that has been arranged to play to my disadvantage. So I think in terms of, you're right, the 3-2 split that we have on the board, right? Well, if you like what you're seeing, okay, you think the district, as TJ says in all his propaganda, that the district is so much better off than it was 4 years ago, and that we've righted all the wrongs, and that we're on our way to paradise, then look at the board and the 3-2 majority that's running things right now, of which he's a member, and reelect him. Because losing me isn't going to change anything. If I leave the board, then it's just 4-1. Nothing changes.
Right.
So if you like, you like the way it is, you know, you don't think anything needs to be improved. You think that everything that's been done, you know, has reaped positive benefit, then you probably should support TJ, because he promises you that he's going to keep going in that same direction. And if you do reelect him, nothing will change. I can guarantee you that, because that 3-2 majority will hold. But one of us isn't going back. Maybe both of us aren't going back, but certainly one of us is not going back. And so if you want change, the one of us not to send back is him. Because that basically busts up the 3-person majority that exists over there, leaves me with Kimberly, and allows us to compete for that person who's coming in from Poway.
Right.
Someone will come in from District B.
Right.
And we will at least have an opportunity to work with them. And maybe they will truly be independent and objective and unbiased. And they'll decide issue by issue how they want to go about it, rather than just reflexively lining up with one side or the other.
Right.
And so I think that's really what you got to look at. You know, if you want, if you like the way it is and you think everything's cool, then TJ's the way to go, because he's certainly promising you more of the same. But if you want to bust up that 3-2 dynamic, send him packing and send me back. And we'll at least have a fighting chance to get some of these issues that I've laid out in front of you now aired, because right now they're being suppressed. They're not being discussed in closed session or in open session. They're not getting on the docket, because we don't control the docket.
So the majority controls what goes on the agenda.
Absolutely. The majority and the superintendent.
Okay. And so issues that you want to bring forward, you can't even bring them forward.
Nope. In fact, the board bylaws and state law say one board member requesting something be put on the agenda is enough to compel it to happen. Not in this district. So Kimberly and I have requested things to go on the docket many times and been ignored or given some BS reason why they can't go on the docket.
Is that illegal?
I think it is. Yeah.
Wow.
The only way it happens is if somebody comes forward and sues them. Here's another example. There's a lot of litigation that goes on in this district, largely due to our incompetence in handling things like special ed, IAs, IEPs, and those sort of things. And I don't know about you, but I think as a board member, I have a right to look at every single dollar that this district spends and opine on whether it's appropriate.
Yeah, that's
whether
your job.
Whether it's a good priority. Yeah. I think most people would agree with that.
Yeah.
Yet, we have asked to see, Kimberly and I, certain legal invoices and been told that we're not allowed to see them.
Wait a minute.
Yeah, we're concerned about monies that are being paid to Dan Shinoff, a disgraced lawyer who we've tried to free the district from over 4 years unsuccessfully. And I mean, our legal costs are horrendous. You know, we pay millions of dollars a year in legal fees for varying things that could easily be pared down or taken in-house. But in particular, you know, we're paying money to defend lawsuits in this particular case against two members of the board. TJ and Michelle are being sued in federal court for denying access to their Facebook accounts, denying public access to their Facebook accounts. And so there's a weird juxtaposition there in that the district is defending them because and paying for that defense, saying that, well, this is within the scope of their duties, so we're obliged to defend them. And yet the whole reason they're arguing they can block people from their Facebook account is that it's a private account. It's not part of their duty as a public official.
Right.
And I mean, it's just blatantly horse hockey, right?
Right.
But yet the district and the superintendent allow these legal bills to come in and pay them. And so Kimberly and I say, hey, we'd like to take a look at these bills. We'd like to see how much they are and what exactly they're being paid for. And so there is a provision in the law that says, for example, legal invoices are subject to Public Records Act requests. If you want to see a legal invoice or all the legal invoices, you can. You can make a PRA request. However, there is a provision in the law that says that PRA request, you can deny it if there's ongoing litigation. Because that might disclose.
That's fair.
Yeah. I think it is, too.
Yeah.
And so But that's a PRA request, Public Records Act. And so Kimberly and I said, well, that doesn't apply to us. We're board members. We're allowed to see these invoices as they're being paid because we want to know what we're paying for and how much we're paying for it.
Yeah.
Well, the superintendent has procured a legal opinion paid for by the district that says, no, the only way a board member can look at this ongoing litigation costs is if the board approves it. Well, you have two members of the board, Michelle and TJ, who are the subject of this lawsuit. And so at least common sense would dictate that they should remove themselves. They shouldn't be allowed to vote on whether or not.
Yeah.
No, might makes right.
Really?
And so, again, I can't technically say what happened, but you can figure it out. Two of us are saying we want to see those invoices. The superintendent has procured a legal opinion from basically her personal lawyer paid for by the district saying that, well, you can only do that with full board approval. Well, I'm here to tell you I don't have access to those invoices. So obviously I didn't receive full board approval. Well, who else could have denied me access to those invoices?
Unbelievable.
And yes, I believe that a recusal would have been appropriate.
Well, yeah.
And had a recusal been appropriate, Kimberly and I would have supported letting us see those invoices.
So it might have been a 2-1 vote or right. a 3-0.
Right. And so, it doesn't take genius to figure out the math involved. I don't have to actually disclose who voted for what, in spite of the fact that the superintendent tells me I can't. So here I am, a board member, and I can't even look at the district's legal bills. Well, and the argument that they say is, well, we're afraid that you're going to turn those over to the people who want to see them, to the people making the Public Records Act requests for those invoices. And I said, well, if I do that, it's against the law. And then again, that's not really your issue, is it? That's the DA's prerogative.
Right.
You can't. It's prior restraint. You can't say, well, I'm not going to let you publish this because it's defamatory. Well, until you publish it, you can't determine if it's defamatory. That's for a court to decide. Same thing here. It's like, well, you can't exercise prior restraint. See, I'm not going to let you see this because I'm afraid you're going to do something illegal with it. Well, I'm not. I state categorically, I'm not going to do anything illegal with it. I'm not going to turn it over. But they've said that, well, that's a basis for not letting you see them at all. And so the compromise they said was, OK, we'll let you see the invoices, but we're going to redact them and you have to do it in the superintendent's presence.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And so now I would have to sit in a room with the superintendent and look at a bunch of invoices that have every meaningful piece of information redacted from it. That's where we are.
This is a joke.
It is a joke. And it's a fiefdom. And you have two board members who have utterly no power or influence. The only power or influence we get is from the public, is when the public comes forward and demands something. It's like that in all politics. The only thing that trumps money in politics, Trump, I didn't mean to say that, but the only thing that supersedes money in politics
right.
is public opinion.
Right.
It's the only thing that can drown out money in politics.
That's right.
And that's kind of what we have here. When I talk about money, I'm really talking about power and the power that money buys. And so we have three members of our board who have the power. Superintendent is in league with them. And they exercise that power irrespective of what's right or what's legal. And the only way that changes is if the public rises up and demands something different, because that's the only thing they're going to respond to. And this is the public's chance to do that. They can rise up at the polls, reelect me, send TJ packing, and change the power dynamic on the board so that they don't have the power to have might make right.
Interesting. Well, good.
And I agree with that. And again, the public can do that in many ways. They can come to the board meetings and protest en masse, because that will get people's attention. And they can protest in the most effective way possible, which is with your vote.
Makes sense. Well, we started this podcast project, earlier this month. We had our first, we had some Poway City Council candidates that came here. And, that's part of what I'm trying to do here is to is to get the information out to the public. You know, because a lot of people don't know the candidates, they don't know the issues, they don't get straight talk, right, on what's really going on.
Right.
And so hopefully this forum, this podcast is going to be able to get the information out so the voters can make decisions, so they can be educated, not ignorant, as we talked about before, so they can be educated on how they go about their vote.
Yeah, and I think that I think voters are, I'll describe them as subconsciously dogmatic, meaning that we all have a lean, a tendency to go one way or the other about certain things, either Republican, Democrat, whatever. And I think when we raise that subconscious dogma, you know, our subconscious inclination to go to the right or the left, we raise it to a conscious level and we say, okay, I'm going to ignore that subconscious dogma, the fact that you're a Republican and you're a Democrat, and I'm just going to consciously address this based on other factors. I think the public makes good choices, and I think the public does itself a tremendous service. It's only when we are apathetic and we default to our subconscious dogma, saying, oh, that guy's a Republican, he must be a fiscal conservative, right? He must really be a taxpayer advocate, as he holds himself out to be.
You're not talking about your opponent, are you?
Not at all. And he must be.
Right.
And I'm saying, you know, jettison that subconscious dogma.
Right.
Raise it to a conscious level and look and say, well, just because you call yourself something doesn't mean you are.
Right.
Because that's sort of the easy way out, right?
Oh, yeah.
I vote for the R, I vote for the D, whatever, and it takes all the work out of it.
Yeah, it does.
But that's letting somebody else think for you.
Wow. A lot to think about.
Yeah, and it's particularly difficult in these down-ballot, nonpartisan races because they don't get a lot of publicity.
Right.
And people aren't, in a way, it's kind of a blessing, I guess, that people aren't identified by party because, you know, at least forces people to have some conscious input into the decision they're making. But the problem is that there's just not a lot of money spent on these races. There's not a lot of information provided. And so if people want to know about their school board, they have to do some legwork, you know? I mean, at least, I mean, the problem is that, you know, you look and you figure, okay, there's X number of people eligible to vote. Smaller percentage of those are registered to vote. Smaller percentage of those actually show up and vote. A smaller percentage of those actually vote on the entire ballot. Mm. So,
right.
When you get down to the bottom of the ballot, like school board, you know, you're talking about 10 or 15% of the public.
Oh,
yeah. It's eligible to vote.
Yeah.
Actually weighing in on who they want to educate their children, spend the most money that Californians spend on anything. We spend half our state budget on education.
Right.
The single biggest, you know, piece of the budget. And again, I said, we can't control how much that is other than there's a constitutional provision that tells us how much it has to be at a minimum.
Yeah, percentage of the budget.
But
right?
We have complete control over how to spend it.
Right.
And so, so literally all but 10 or 15% of the electorate are saying, well, yeah, it's the biggest single thing we write a check for in California. And these five people have complete control over how we spend that money. But I'm just not interested.
Well, or you could argue three people have complete control.
Right. I'm just not interested. It's not important and it doesn't affect me.
Right. Well, it does affect. I mean, you know, taxes in California are extraordinarily high compared to other states. And if half that money is going to education, yeah, that's a big deal.
Look at it that way. I'm a tax guy.
Right.
You know, you file your tax return every year. You pay California X amount of dollars, right?
Right.
So look at your tax return and say, oh, I paid $3,000 in California tax last year. Figure half of that winds up at PUSD.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
Because it's half of that is allocated to, it goes to the state, half of it's allocated to education. It's allocated through a convoluted formula back to. But if you just say, okay, so $1,500 of this $3,000 I'm sending to our friends in Sacramento is coming back to these five people.
Right.
Hey, sweetie.
That's Nona.
Yeah, she's a sweetheart. is coming back to these five people.
Right.
And so they're going to just, I mean, it's literally like you, John Riley, you're cutting the five of us check for $1,500.
Oh man.
Don't you want to know how we spend it?
Absolutely.
And so, well, I regret to tell you, John, that two of us don't really have any say in how you spend that $1,500. You got to talk to these three over here.
Nor can you see the invoices.
Right. Of how it's been spent.
Of how it's being
spent. Not only can you not decide how it's been spent, but we're not even going to tell you how it's been spent. Oh my God. And so those three people. So you want to know how your $1,500 got spent? You go ask Darsh, Michelle, and TJ and say, what'd you spend my $1,500 on? Chances are it was a lawyer.
What else? What else do you have to share with us? I know you got tons left.
Oh, well, I don't know. I mean, I think I've... Somebody's happy.
Yeah, Nona's happy down there. Yeah.
I think I've made the case for how I'm different. I don't have any political aspirations. I'm not a professional politician. TJ is a professional politician. He's literally earned his living his entire career working in politics. Yes, I'm just a tax accountant.
Right.
You know, and so I do laugh and I really enjoy when we are in public forums where he holds himself. I'm a taxpayer advocate because I serve on the San Diego County Taxpayers Association. Mm-hmm. I find that sort of laughable because I am an actual taxpayer advocate. I actually represent people before the taxing authorities.
Right. You do.
Yeah. The IRS and the FTP and the EDD and others. And so I actually advocate for individual taxpayers. And so I find it laughable that he holds himself out as a taxpayer advocate. It's even more laughable when you look at how he chooses to help spend the public's money. So that's really what it comes down to. I mean, you know, ideology aside, which is how this is going to be pitched to you.
Right.
You know, people pitch this saying, you know, he's a Democrat, she's a Republican, he's anti-labor, he's this, he's that, or the other thing. You know, what it really comes down to is you got three people running in District C, which is mostly Rancho Bernardo. Mm-hmm. Well, Rancho Bernardo, as I say, mostly Rancho Bernardo. As I said, there was districting done that was very much gerrymandered. And so Rancho Bernardo was cut into not two, but three different districts. Three.
She's rolling around on the floor.
Oh, I've got one at home that likes to claw the carpet. Like
that's what she's doing.
Like a cat.
Yeah, and she claws it and then she spins around on it. And
oh, that's very inventive.
And yeah. So she like that's her spot. It's right there. It's on the other side of this drape.
Oh, is that what? Okay, because mine digs at it like a cat, and I can't figure out what her story is. I just figure she's lost it. But we had talked previously about the districting and how it's definitely been done to help certain people and to hurt certain others. But one of the things that offends me is that, you know, they cut Rancho Bernardo into not one, but not two, but three different districts. And they did this to dilute its voting power.
Oh, clearly. Yeah.
And one of the things that I say in my ballot statement and I say here is that, I voted against it to begin with. I voted for a map that put all four of us Penasquitans into one district, gave Rancho Bernardo its own district, Forest Ranch its own district, Poway, and then sort of the CMR Sabre Springs. You know, it was logical. The districts looked normal.
Yeah.
Not convoluted.
Right.
And so I oppose this. And, I tell people now, I say, look, and I say it in my ballot statement. I say, if you elect me, I will do everything in my power when we redistrict in 2021, because there's a census in 2020. So we have to redistrict again in 2021. I will do everything in my power to reunite Rancho Bernardo into one district, which will basically give it pretty much its own district. Rancho Bernardo has enough people in it to constitute,
well, of course they do,
primarily one.
Yeah.
One district.
Yeah.
And I don't like the way it was done now. I voted against it, and I will do everything in my power to fix it. And that's a promise that I make to people in Rancho Bernardo, you know, and I will do this even if it puts me out of office, even if it puts me into a district with another incumbent who doesn't have to run again. And so Rancho Bernardo gets to elect its own person and I'm not in that district.
Well, you offered that up.
I did.
When they were talking about redoing the maps.
Right. And I had no problem with that. If you had put all four of us into one district in Rancho Penasquitos, Michelle, TJ, and I would have been out of office. And Darsh would have continued for the next 2 years of her term. Mm-hmm. And you would have had new people elected in Poway, Rancho Bernardo, and Forest Ranch. And I was perfectly fine with that. This isn't a life for me or a career. And it was the right thing to do. But other interests saw it in a different light.
Well, that whole mapping process was extraordinarily controversial. Mm-hmm. I spoke out against it at one of the board meetings. We need to redo it, no question.
Yeah, and we have a chance. Again, in 3 years, we have to redistrict. But if you've got the same three people drawing the map, basically three people drew this map.
Right.
And so if you have the same three people drawing the map, you're going to wind up with the same convoluted BS that you've got right now. Whereas instead of just saying, look, let's just carve these districts up in a way that makes sense and let the chips fall where they may.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I don't know what to tell you. You know, I think that it was wrong and I'll do everything in my power to change it if I can.
So what do you think? Final prediction for the Aztec game tonight against Eastern Michigan. What do you like?
You
like the Aztecs, but how many touchdowns do they win by?
Well, they should be able to score 40 points. Although, you know, Eastern Michigan comes from the MAC, which is a very solid conference. They've put a couple teams in the last couple of years into New Year's Day bowl games. But, you know, the only thing about the Aztecs that's suspect is their secondary. Boy, Stanford really pointed that out to us dramatically.
The ending of the Arizona State game.
That our secondary needs work. Mm-hmm. So if we can avoid being exploited that way, I'm sure we'll be fine. And I think we should be able to score 40 points, which hopefully would be enough to win.
Didn't the Aztecs play Eastern Michigan like, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 years ago?
Oh, did they? I don't know.
It sounds like
I know we lost to South Alabama 2 years in a row.
Oh, my gosh.
Both here and there.
Yeah. So it's just, oh, my God.
Yeah. So, you know.
We have a kicker now that's good.
Yeah.
And John Barron's all right.
Unfortunately, he's a senior.
I know.
And so, yes, he's the first truly legitimate kicker we've had in forever.
Isn't that Donald Trump's pseudonym, John Barron?
Is it?
I think I've heard people use that. I don't know if that's true or not.
Yeah.
anyways.
I think in the end, you know, it comes down to when you look at the three candidates in this district, you have Terry Norwood, who's a good woman, very well-meaning, a political neophyte. And I say that not because she's never served in public office, but she hasn't been part of the political dialogue for that long. Mm-hmm. I've been part of the political dialogue my whole life, even though, you know, this was my first run for public office. And so, and again, she's from RB. I don't think that alone is enough to qualify you to serve on the school board. And I think she's only in this race because she saw me as vulnerable vis-a-vis the Democratic Party because of my union stance. So I think that that's unfortunate. She was a supporter of mine. I supported her 2 years ago, and she was agreeing to support me this time, but she chose to go another route. You know, TJ, the difference between he and I couldn't be starker in personality, in approach, in belief system, in purported belief system, and in actual action on the school board. You know, I encourage anyone. I mean, if you don't like me personally, you think he's a great guy, okay, go ahead and base your vote on that if you want. But I think it should be based on something more substantive. And you've got 4 years of footage to look at to see where we were on the issues. I'll give you an example. The issue of John Collins. Right. The ultimate vote to get rid of John Collins was 5-0. So it looks like, hey, everybody was down with that. Right.
Right.
No, that's not how it worked. Kimberly and I worked very hard. The first step in that was to get outside counsel, to get our own lawyer who would come and advise the board on how to deal with John. Mm-hmm. Well, John didn't want that, of course. John wanted Dan Shinoff to just work out a deal.
Right.
Because John basically felt, okay, if I'm going to leave, you're going to give me my 18-month severance, which would have run about $500,000, and I'll just go on my merry way. And truth be told, Michelle, TJ, and Andy at that time were willing to do that. In fact, the three of them were working tacitly behind the scenes to try and make that arrangement, and we have the text messages to prove it.
That's a Brown Act violation too, isn't it?
It is a Brown Act violation.
Yeah.
And but unfortunately, the Brown Act is a toothless law that no one enforces. But yes, it is a Brown Act violation. And we have, and as part of the process of uprooting John Collins, we got access to all of his emails and text messages. And there were text messages between John Collins and the three of them, basically trying to work out an arrangement where he would get his buyout. And as the process went along, fortunately, we hired a good lawyer, Maribel Medina, who came in and said, look, there's something that's not right with this contract. Contract is supposed to be for this much, but yet his W-2 says, you know, half again. How much? Why is that? And so we agreed to commission a forensic audit to come in and look at that issue. Well, we had arranged for a forensic auditor from Orange County to come and do it, and he asked us to wait a couple of weeks until his schedule cleared up, and so we did. We held back until he could do it. And then literally the night before he was supposed to come down, he called Maribel and said, I'm not going to do it, and wouldn't say why. I have reason to believe that pressure was put on him by John Collins and the late Ron Bennett, former contractor to the district, to encourage this CPA not to get involved in POSD's business for fear that he might not get work in the future from other districts. So he bailed out very suddenly and without explanation. So I got a call from Maribel saying, hey, you know, we have a problem here. So in one day's time, I found a new forensic auditor. Me personally. She called me because I'm a CPA. So I found another forensic auditor from Brennig and Company. They came in, started doing the forensic audit, and found out, well, you've got way more problems here than just him being overpaid. You've got him reimbursing himself for things that are personal. You've got him paying himself for vacation days that his contract doesn't allow and that seemingly he took anyway. He uncovered a whole nother kettle of fish than what we went in there to look for.
Right.
And they came forward and said, look, this is probably beyond the scope of what our firm can handle. And so Maribel, found another firm in LA, Vicente Lloyd and Stutzman, to come down and perform a much larger scale forensic audit. And that much larger scale forensic audit yielded results that resulted in our firing John, our suing him for $350,000, and providing a case to the district attorney's office that had them charging him with five felony counts, and taking him to, if not trial, but to the preliminary hearing wherein his settlement was reached. So this was all the result of Kimberly and I pushing for separate counsel, separate independent legal advice to advise us on how to deal with John. That would have never happened if the three of them had had their way. They would have just worked out a deal behind the scenes with John. A settlement would have been reached. He'd have gone on his merry way with his $500,000, and the taxpayers would have been left holding the bag. And so even though in the end, all five of us, including Andy, his personal friend, voted to fire him and to sue him, it's only because of the incontrovertible evidence that was dug up by the forensic audit that they agreed to do that. Basically, they would have looked like fools if they hadn't.
Right.
So, but it came to transpire through no effort of their own.
But how did you make that happen if there's only two of you?
Well, surprisingly, John Collins helped a lot.
Really?
Sure. He was such a jerk about it that, we offered to work with him. We offered to negotiate with him. And he was so belligerent that, no, you don't have any cause to fire me. And if I'm going to leave, you're going to give me my whole thing. And he went out and hired a very well-known civil litigator to represent him, someone who knew nothing about Ed Law. Mm-hmm. And
no, Finks, right?
No. Finks was his criminal attorney.
Okay.
A woman named Lynn Lasry was his, who's a very well regarded civil litigator, but that's what she does, civil litigation.
Okay.
And so he brought her in to represent him. Mm-hmm. And so he took a very adversarial stance to begin with, and very adversarial and belligerent, and you have no choice but to do this. And so
to do Shinoff, right?
To do the negotiation and everything else.
Yeah.
And so basically he made it difficult for the other three to not accede to our request to have independent counsel, because he was so aggressive in his posturing toward negotiating with the district that, you know, we really did need someone to represent the board in these negotiations.
So Michelle and TJ and Andy,
right,
they decided to say, okay, go with an independent counsel.
Right. And we interviewed four or five different attorneys on that Sunday afternoon, when some people felt it was didn't smell right, but that's when all those lawyers could be there. And
right,
you know, these people came from LA on a Sunday. You know, these are high-powered lawyers, you know, and so to get them all in a room at the same time was not easy, and to do it on a Sunday was very gracious of them.
So
in the end, the vote to hire Maribel was 4.5 to 1.5.
Explain that.
Michelle couldn't decide between two lawyers, so she voted 1.5 for each lawyer.
Seriously?
Yes. It's right there on the record. And that's typical of her. She sometimes has most times has difficulty making up her mind. So, yes, but she voted 1.5 for one lawyer and 1.5 for another. And so Maribel was hired. And once Maribel was in charge, things changed dramatically. She basically, and she brought everything she found, she brought to the board, and the arguments and the reasoning, and there was never any backlash from the board. There was never any resistance from the board to Maribel's advice. Maribel basically did good work for us, and it was recognized throughout the process that she was giving us good counsel. So, but up until that point, it was sort of a free-for-all.
Wow. Well, thank goodness you were able to get John Collins out and remove, you know, a corrupt superintendent that was abusing taxpayer dollars and taking money that's supposed to be there to help kids.
Well, and it's unfortunate because after he reached his plea agreement, and what he pled to was a Form 700 violation, not reporting outside income. He'd been doing outside consulting and not telling the district about it, which is a violation of his contract, mm-hmm. and also a violation of Form 700 because he wasn't reporting that compensation mm-hmm. on his Form 700, which is a Fair Political Practices Commission disclosure form that all public officials, including myself, have to fill out every year. Mm-hmm. And so that's what he eventually pled to. He didn't plead to any of the four felony counts of stealing money or, you know, taking vacation that he'd already been paid for and that sort of thing. And so he went on TV literally within hours of reaching his plea agreement and saying, see, I didn't do anything wrong. I misfilled out a form. I failed to file a form properly. That's what I pled to. It's a misdemeanor. I'm only paying the $185,000 because it's just cutting my losses. You know, everything that I did, I had an explanation for. If the board had just asked me, I would have told them what the explanations were, but nobody ever asked me. And, you know, that couldn't be further from the truth. We sat down, meaning Maribel, our attorney, sat down with him on two separate occasions before his due process hearing, confronting him with these allegations, asking him, could we reach a deal on reimbursement and that sort of thing, and a departure that would have saved his reputation, it would have saved his credentials. Both of his credentials have been revoked by the state of California, which is almost unheard of. Both his administrative and teaching credential have been revoked by the state of California. So obviously they thought there was merit to the case.
Yeah.
And the judge gave him 5 years probation Instead, if he doesn't make his payments, the criminal charges come back. The judge Wow. doesn't do that lightly if there's no case there.
Right.
And so, you know, his arguments that, well, you know, I was never given a chance to provide the logical explanations, that's ridiculous because we gave him two separate opportunities to negotiate with our counsel. He declined both of those. We had a due process. So he runs around saying he was denied due process. We had a due process hearing.
Right.
As is mandated in his contract. And the only thing he said nothing in that due process hearing. He said not one word. And the only one who spoke was his attorney, Lynn Lazary, and she spent the entire allotted time, like half an hour, basically complaining about how he was being denied due process in the middle of his due process hearing. So,
no,
yeah. And so it's, you know, it's silly, really.
You know. Said earlier in our conversation, you commented how some people are extraordinarily gifted in knowing how to lie.
Yes.
And lie successfully.
Yeah.
But at some point, they get caught.
They do. Doesn't stop them from lying about it. Doesn't stop them from going on television saying, oh, yeah, what you see, it's really not what you see. You know, I mean, he even fooled a very competent journalist, you know, into letting him go on the air and basically have this sort of infomercial.
Wow.
But, you know, the bottom line is he was crooked. The system was designed to continue that because everyone was scratching everyone else's back. I mean, this is a man who was negotiating with PFT solo. He was the only one negotiating with him. And he had a Me Too clause in his contract that said whatever raise the teachers get, he gets.
I mean, I'm laughing because I can't believe it. It's almost comical.
And yet, to give you some insight, I mean, I sat down in a table smaller than this and looked him in the eye and said, John, that is unacceptable. And he said, I've never negotiated on my behalf. I've only negotiated on behalf of the district. And I said, even if that's true, John, which I don't believe it is, but even if it's true, the appearance is such that you cannot continue to do it. It's improper.
Yes.
He was incapable of grasping the fact that how that looked.
So you don't think he really understood, or do you think he was just slyly playing the game?
I don't know. It's a good question. He'd been doing it so long, he may have convinced himself that it was okay. I don't know.
That's like George Costanza, right?
It's not
a lie if you believe it.
Right. Exactly. But it was readily obvious to everyone else, including the teachers union. They understood very clearly what a good deal they had John Collins.
Yeah.
And that's why they endorsed, in spite of the mountains of rationale for getting rid of Todd Gutschow and Mark Davis, they endorsed them for reelection, and they endorsed TJ because they knew TJ would just slide right into that empty seat Penny Ranfdell was leaving behind. And they knew what a good deal they had. And it was literally a situation of everybody scratching everybody else's back because they had formal Me Too clauses with the other groups, with PSEA and with APSEM, to give whatever raise the teachers got. And that was actually a specific priority point that they had laid out. It's that the teachers union always gets negotiated with first. And then whatever we agree to with them, we give to the other two unions. And that was formalized in their contracts. We took that out. But unfortunately, under the three-person majority we have now, it still exists. It's
right.
Just not formalized.
Right.
We still negotiate with PFT first. And when we reach an agreement with them, the other two groups automatically get the same amount.
It's interesting.
And so I don't object to the other two groups getting the same amount.
Yeah.
What I object to is not negotiating with PFT with the understanding that the other two groups are going to get the same amount and you have to be realistic about how much you can afford.
Exactly.
PFT negotiates only for PFT as if PFT is the only union, and as they should.
Right.
But as board members, we've got to understand that we have two other groups to take care
of. And you can't control the revenue. So there's only so much to go around.
Yep. It's finite.
You know, it's interesting. You say how, you know, that everyone was scratching each other's back, but you went back to your priorities. What? Students, parents,
taxpayers, and then employees.
Employees. So it's the fourth priority. Everyone's scratching their back.
Yes.
But priorities one, two, and three are the ones that are paying the bills.
Yes.
You know, you say write a check for $1,500 or whatever it is.
Right.
No one's scratching our back.
No. And again, you know, I if I were doing what was in my political best interests, you know, I would be doing what TJ's doing. I would be lining myself with these unions because they're going to pour money into his campaign. They're going to help him stay in office or try to help him stay in office. You know, and I could do that with a straight face because it aligns with my ideology.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not doing it because I don't think it's right. I don't think it's fair to the taxpayers. TJ, on the other hand, it completely misaligns with his stated ideology.
Right.
And everyone being the union, and he just sort of magically ignore that. Now, he will tell you, again, I'm a taxpayer advocate because if we don't work with the teachers and give them their raises, they're going to go on strike, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And again, it's like, okay, great. You know, I want to buy a car from you.
That's a great example.
You know, because that, yeah. I negotiate for a living.
Yeah.
And that's about the worst negotiation strategy I've ever heard. And the union knows that. And,
right.
that's what they're paying for.
Right. Oh, man. So you, TJ, and Terry, the voters have a choice.
Correct.
And the voters need to understand the differences in the candidates. You're laying out a pretty strong case.
Well, I think the choices are stark.
Yeah.
You know, I don't see how an educated voter could look at the three of us and say what so many people seem to say now is, oh, there's no difference. I don't know how you could reasonably say that there's no difference between the three of us. I mean, clearly they will make their cases for how they're different from me.
Right.
But, you know, I don't think we could be more different in terms of our priorities and our approaches and our qualifications.
Sure. So full disclosure, and I don't know if I told you this, but, you know, Terry Norwood, I had a conversation with her. She's going to come and do a podcast here on the John Riley Project.
Oh, good.
We'll welcome her.
Oh, yeah. And I can't wait to see it.
And so I've invited all the candidates, you know, in all the races. Everyone's free to, you know, no matter who you are, if you're on the ballot, come on down.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, who knows? Maybe TJ will come.
That would be great.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
I have no problem with any of that. Again, you know, we so far there's only one forum scheduled, and that's the RB Community Council, and that's in late October.
So you're not going to the Green Valley one on October 3rd.
I haven't been invited to it. I think that's Powegians only.
That's what we were talking about. That is whether or not it was for all school board candidates or just the ones, because ours is what, District B.
B, right? I think it's just for those three.
Okay, so all right, then I guess we won't be seeing you and the other candidates. And I guess that makes sense.
Well, right. The only one that's scheduled for us to appear at is the RB Community Council, which I think is October 21, but it's sometime in late October. And I have RSVP'd to that. And so you can come out and see the three of us in one room.
Oh, that'll be good. That'll be fun.
Yeah. And like I said, I just don't have any trepidation about this. You know, I'm not afraid for anyone to raise any issue or talk to me about it. And I can, you know, and again, the difference is, you know, my style, my personality is I confront things. I confront people. I confront issues. Some people aren't comfortable with that. Some people are. And so, you know, I'm not smooth. I'm not subtle. Okay. I'm an accountant. Okay, what I do is I render order out of chaos, and I'm very good at it, but I need the power to do that rendering. Right now, I don't have it. You know, I've got, you know, 2/5 of the power that I need to render some of the chaos into order. And TJ will tell you that's already been done. We've already brought order. Everything's fine. We've done everything else. Well, that's exactly what they were telling us 4 years ago, is that everything was fine. We've got this great district, wonderful scores, et cetera, et cetera. Well, I knew from the outside that was wrong. Well, I can tell you, I've spent 4 years on the inside Okay, I've spent 4 years inside the barn of PUSD, and I can tell you everything is not right, and there is still stuff that needs to be fixed. And if you give me the power to do that, you give me that 3/5 ability to render order out of chaos, I can assure you that I will do it.
Well, there it is. Charlie Sellers, candidate, Poway Unified School District, Trustee Area C.
Correct. C for Charlie.
C for Charlie.
Yep.
That's good. I like that. It's easy to remember.
Mm-hmm.
And we wish you well in this race.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And thank you for having me. Mm-hmm. And thank you very much for the public service that you're doing. I mean, this is your day off. This is a Saturday. Mm-hmm. And you're doing this because you love it and you think it's important.
That's right.
And I agree with both of those things. And I can't thank you enough for giving me the opportunity, because my avenues are, as we've previously discussed, somewhat limited at getting my message out. And so I'm very grateful for it.
If you want to come back, we'd love to have you.
Oh, that'd be terrific.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks, John.
All right.